Bourbon and Brown Town is an affiliate podcast of Soapbox Production and Organizing that pairs critical analyses of media, culture, politics, and everyday happenings with the tastiest of spirits. With the occasional help of Chicago's most talented and creative artists, activists, filmmakers, academics, and social entrepreneurs, Brown Town unpacks current events, social issues, and gives personal insight into various topics.
Soapbox is a film and social activism nonprofit that specializes in multimedia curation of creative projects centered around education, entertainment, and structural social change for a more equitable and creative world. So for this episode, sit back, sip something good, and enjoy.
This is America. Don't got you slipping up. Look how I'm living up. Police be tripping up. Yeah, this is America. Guns in my area. I got the strap. Hey. I gotta carry 'em. Yeah, yeah, I'ma go into this. Yeah, yeah, this is gorilla. Yeah, yeah, I'm so cold like, yeah. Yeah. I'm so dull like, yeah. We gon' blow like, yeah.
I want to welcome everyone to another installment of Bourbon and Brown Town. I am your host, David Brown Town, hanging out with my boy, Colin. Colin, man, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
We're okay. Yeah, no, you know. Doing it.
We are okay. He's always very collective with the answer. He's like, we're good. Like, I ask you.
Well, you know, I guess there's multiple sides to me. But here we are today, bringing you another installment conversation that I know Colin is very eager to start talking about. It kind of like started on our way to Missouri back in March, and we kind of just started fumbling around the idea, you know, in the conversation, gun control. They've been in the conversation for a minute, and, you know, we're always hungry. We digested the media. We saw what's out there. But here we are today, hanging out with y'all.
This is kind of shortly after the Parkland shooting. We first were talking about this. Just Dave and I kind of chopping it up in the car. And we're like, this should be an episode we should do.
Yeah. And it's called Welcome to the Gun Show. Welcome to the Gun Show. Let's really just jump in here. There's a lot to cover, and you know, we're not trying to repeat what's already been said. But I think there's a lot of things and a lot of issues, a lot of topics and comments that we can kind of like jump into, but we can go directly into the framing of gun control, you know? And so like, what does this mean, Colin? Like framing of gun control debate, like what is a typical framing, or why is that a thing?
I feel like over the past couple of years, especially, I mean, it's always been in the conversation, but I think over the past couple of years, whenever there's a, you know, and I hate to say this, but whenever there's a new school shooting, mm-hmm. mass shooting, mm-hmm. some shooting somewhere in our society, I think it's ramped up, especially the past decade or so. There's a debate in the public consciousness between Democrats and Republicans and whoever about gun control and common sense gun control and what that means, what that looks like, and who and what exactly should be done. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, conservative outlets and outlets that they feel like they're being attacked, mm-hmm. Gun owners feel like they're being attacked, feel like, you know, the left is trying to propose taking away all guns. Part of the legislation that normally comes forward is closing the gun control loophole, empowering like government to actually be able to study gun violence as a public health problem, which mm-hmm. you know, NRA blocks a lot of the time. And a lot of times, the thing I've noticed is very much it's reactionary to the event that happened, which I think happens in public policy in general. Mm-hmm. So after the Vegas shooting is about banning bump stocks. After Parkland is about the age you can buy assault weapons, which you know, of course, kind of makes sense, but it's always very kind of reactionary.
Yeah.
But that's, again, how lots of public policy works. That's kind of what always happens. But I think after Parkland, it looked different, right?
Yeah, I mean, and I think you're very adamant because of the placing and who it was, right?
A little bit. I mean, I think you know, the students are mobilizing after Parkland. I mean, they've seen this in their, you know, young lives many times, this being like mass shootings and stuff, and mm-hmm. I think it happened and it hit home, and they were politicized. And I think that's what happens when you get yeah. politicized about some issue, no matter what it is, it hits home somehow. And for some reason, they didn't go away, which I think is great. I think they're another iteration of the activist resurgence, which I always talk about. But what's interesting and good and also kind of frustrating for mm-hmm. me is to see students from this area, you know, typically middle-class white students, this tragic event happens in their community, and they mobilize against it, and they're getting lots of exposure and lots of, like, money, hundreds of thousands of dollars, which, you know, is well-deserved to actually push policy, push change. However, but I look at. However, I can't help but look at Chicago and look at the many youth and adult organizations working against gun violence, gang violence, systemic violence that kind of spawns all these things and all these kind of not deeper issues, but looking at violence in a very comprehensive way, looking at the capitalism, looking at anti-blackness in our public policy, especially in Chicago and nationwide, mm-hmm. and how all those things kind of beget the violence we see on an everyday basis. You know, tons of kids who deal with trauma from school shootings in the UK, from school stabbings in the communities all the time.
Yeah.
And they're mobilizing against it. And again, have a comprehensive framework looking at the top-down policies and interpersonal trauma, how to treat that trauma, and all these different things that go around the issue of violence in general. But they're not getting $100,000 from Oprah.
Yeah.
Dwayne Wade is not giving them $100,000, even though he's from here. Mm-hmm. So it's always this thing where it's like, this is great, the March for Lives. I'm all for it, but who's being included? Who's being amplified in this fight? And how do we not fund and amplify the fights that have been going on,
mm-hmm.
and also the fights have a more comprehensive analysis on things.
Yeah.
So again, the Parkland students are looking for particularly like legislation change, which I think needs to happen, but guns in America and violence in America is a lot bigger than simply the legislation.
Yeah,
and we'll totally get to that. Actually, we're going to be playing you something right now from Tiffany Dana. She's currently the new National Director for Youth and College Division for the NAACP. So let's take a listen.
For our lives on March 24, 2018. We're here for three important reasons. Number one, what they will not do is ignore black voices. Number two, what they will make sure to do is include our agenda in the agenda for gun prevention reform. When we talk about legislative issues and solutions for gun violence, it has to include the intersections of black violence. That means guns, that means gangs, that means schools, that means teachers, that means police brutality, that means state violence. It has to include all of that stuff if we're going to be able to do this together. This is not just about white people in school shootings in the classroom. They kill us in churches. They kill us on the streets.
Yeah.
They kill us in the car. Yeah. They kill us when we're traveling. And they kill us in our classroom.
Yeah.
This is about all the young black people that you're looking at right behind you. That's what this is about. It's not about none of this extra stuff with the concert. That's great. We're here to organize, represent, and show power. And the third thing that we're here to do is make sure we have a great time.
Yeah.
We came from all across the entire country to be here for this specific moment because I want my people to feel empowered. And I want them to go back to the field and to know that when they get back to the local organizing, that's where it matters.
She just nails it.
She's like very quick and like
I can't.
I read some of the comments. I read some of the comments and people were just like, "Oh, like she doesn't really say anything. She's just talking fast or like blah blah." But I'm like, they're not listening. You know what I'm saying? I really think the end of it is like probably my favorite part. Just like, you know, we're taking this momentum that we're feeling right now,
right?
And we're taking it back, understanding, organizing, like putting ourselves together, blah blah blah. But yeah, so you want to tell us a little bit about the clip?
Have you seen that clip before?
Yeah, up until today, no. I think I saw it on Twitter at some point, okay. Or maybe like a smaller version.
I think it's great. I think not the one like that you saw. Said what I was trying to say, but much more articulately and much faster.
Live.
It's
too?
Like, yeah, it's just like this March for Our Lives is good, and everything that's happening is great, and it's like, but like let's look at how the media frames this. Let's look at how we always latch on to the easy solutions to things and the simple solutions to things. Again, March for Our Lives is good. Again, you know, there are common sense gun regulations that need to happen, and they need not be reactionary. But this is so much bigger than just scapegoating to someone's mental health problem, right? Which is another problematic thing. And then looking at the isolated incidents, right?
Yep.
This is an American cultural problem, which we'll get into. This is a systemic problem as far as how we criminalize black and brown people. This is a systemic problem as far as how we look at capitalism and how the way gun manufacturers work and consumerism works.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is a much bigger thing and needs to have a holistic solution, which I think is the thesis of kind of her argument.
Yeah.
It needs to be holistic. I mean, you need to look at the most marginalized people, which are black and brown people. And a lot of these regulations and these policies and these narratives, I think, are super important. They're not tangible like policies are, but the narrative, you can prove to the masses that a certain person, a certain being, or a certain group of people is violent, then you can put all kinds of things on the books that make, you know, quote unquote good people who work in, you know, the police department or in the justice program for some reason do things for their best interests and further that criminalization. So the solution to, you know, this problem, like, what's the gun problem? It's bigger than that, first of all, and second of all, it needs to be holistic and addressing all these macro level issues in very real ways and very radical ways and ways that aren't going to be easy and and fun aren't going to happen overnight. It's going to take generations to actually get to a point where we can look at a peaceful, healthy society that actually takes public health seriously and not a pathological thing that scapegoats people of color and marginalized folks.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, you kind of already touched on this. It was like nice to see the type of reaction, and like, you know, these kids are like extremely passionate about what they're talking about. And it's like, that's awesome. But I've seen these kids on CNN, like much more than I think I've seen, you know, like Asada's Daughters or Black Lives Matter Chicago or, you know, Action Chicago, you know, like then I've seen all of them combine in time wise. And it's like you see who's pushing the narrative, what kind of narrative they're pushing and for what reasons. You know, it's like they're not doing wrong by highlighting these children. But then why aren't these other bodies being shown? Yeah. Why aren't their missions and what they've been trying to fight for years up until this point? You know, why aren't they getting the same attention? You know, we look at a Good Kids, Mass City. In Chicago, Kofi's running that, right?
I think he would shun me if he's running it. He's so humble. I think he helped kind of start the coalition, so to speak. Good Kids, Mad City is a movement created by youth from Chicago, Washington D.C., and Baltimore. Very much youth led and kind of adult supported. But basically they feel like they're, you know, attacked by their own city. And that's, again, looking at the mayors in both in Chicago as well as in Baltimore. This is kind of quoting from them. "We stand in solidarity with Parkland and we want to uplift our own struggles. We chose the name Good Kid, Mad City because oftentimes youth are described as negative terms such as quote unquote troubled youth or quote unquote at risk youth. But we are actually good. The system has been against us from the very beginning. We believe Good Kid, Mad City accurately illustrates the struggle we are facing daily. Mm-hmm. We are tired of our shouts for help going unheard. We aren't asking anymore. We are demanding more." And they have listings on the website and the GoFundMe about investment in youth employment, equitable school funding, mental health, all those same things we've kind of always been talking about in this podcast, is in, you know, Chicago activism and just in general, as far as these things that alleviate crime, alleviate poverty, and kind of add to a system and an environment that doesn't beget such violence that we see. So it's like taking money away from punitive measures, right, and putting them in these actual social programs. And we'll, of course, get to that as well. Yeah. But I think that's another thing. It's like, where does the money go?
Yeah, we've talked about it. This problem isn't new. You know, guns have been a staple in our country and just like the way things go. And so we had on here, it was interesting, and I actually don't know if we even looked into it, but like mass shootings under Trump versus mass shootings under any other president.
Yeah.
And like, I'm not entirely like sure. Like, I don't think I've paid enough attention. It'd be interesting to see like if there are distinctions within it. Like, I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I mean, kind of two things. One thing I think of a while ago, again, this is sad, but I don't know which shooting it was, but it was under Obama, and he had a press conference, you know, addressing the shooting. He just looked tired.
Yeah.
He was just like, I'm going to say this. Like, he's like said this. Like, I'm going to say, like, what I normally say. We're going to talk about the same things. We're going to propose, like, legislation. People are going to say they're going to pray for X place, and like, nothing's gonna happen. He's like, this is bullshit. He didn't say this is bullshit, but his subtext was very strong. He's like, y'all fucking serious? I told y'all to do, you know, what? And so I remember that very distinctly, and him just being like, look, like, we've been here before, and I said we should push this, and we didn't, and then like, look what happens.
Like, what do you want to do?
So I was like, yeah, and like Trump's terrible, of course, but it's like, this is I think Trump encapsulates, you know, capitalism, white supremacy, anti-blackness, all those things we keep talking about. So it's like, we're more charging to him, but more so it's like, look at the leadership in the state, and look at, you know, the Republicans having owning the House and the Senate, and then like nothing really, no kind of gun control being pushed. Because lots of them in the pockets of the NRA. And then we kind of look at the power the NRA has and just money and politics in general. It's like, that's a big thing as far as the policy side getting across. So I think that's what looks like, how it looks different under Trump. It's not as much Trump as about who's actually making the laws in the first place. But this is, you know, it doesn't really matter who president is, because again, this is a cultural problem. This is a problem that stems from how we see guns, how we see violence as a thing that we have to do in order to get our point across, in order to, you know, that's domestically and abroad. Like, I remember interviewing someone for What's Beef many years ago. We were looking at the vilification of Chief Keef and like drill rap. And it's like, yeah, it's easy to blame this kid at the time, 16-year-old kid from the South Side, for like talking about guns and stuff. But it's like, but under the Bush and Obama administration, we're sending drones overseas and killing brown people. So it's like, why aren't we talking about that? But it's like, it's not, it's a very similar thing as far as like how do we deal with our problems? We use violence to assert our authority. Yeah. And if you're a kid in Chief Keef's position and you need to assert some kind of ownership, some kind of collection of family and your chosen family, and literally protect yourself, then you know I almost side with the Keefs of the world more mm-hmm. so than the American government for trying to protect their economic interests overseas. So it's just the same kind of argument, the same cultural thing that's a problem. That's a uniquely American problem. But the policy thing is something that's huge across the board as far as where money and politics go. I know for a while you wanted to call this episode like the NRA episode. So I want to get your thoughts on National Rifle Association, which the NRA stands for, and kind of what their role is in all this, if you think there is one.
Well, I mean, there definitely is. You know, we're talking about, you know, money, and that's, you know, it's, what was the name of the article you had? Like, we've legalized bribery. So that's in itself is a thing. And like, I think the NRA has a hold simply because, you know, what we talk about is it's the culture. It's part of the American culture. Right. It's like, you know, we'll whip out a couple stats in a minute, but like, you know, I think their hold in both in every avenue that is related to guns, right? Whether we're looking at military buildings or like, you know, which campaign they want to be behind or et cetera, like what their agendas are. Yeah. What I was going to say is like, it's been interesting because originally I was not like a huge like gun person at all. Like, I wasn't. It's like, just like, you know, guns, like do you really need a gun? Like, I don't know. Let's talk about this. But I have, you know, my own brother now, like, you know, he's a registered gun owner. You know, he's followed, you know, all the books, and it's something that he did kind of like as a hobby. And I think that's kind of opened up more light into, you know, the individual owning a firearm, owning something that can kill someone in a much more distant way than, you know, stabbing someone to death, which we'll kind of talk to in a little bit. But what I really wanted to go into, NRA influence or not, is really like what kind of policies like our state tries to push forward, and kind of like the pros and cons of like, you know, common sense gun reform. Like, we all know like killing people's bad, right? Or, you know, so we're told. But, you know, looking, you know, oftentimes there's always like, you know, closing gun show loopholes, or, you know, enhancing mandatory background checks, you know, standardize them all across the state or et cetera. It's like, why hasn't that happened? And if it has happened, why has it been like, why has it failed? Because it's been failing, right?
I mean, I think you speak to it as far as the NRA influencing folks. And I think I've read, I don't know if this is how true this is, but there's some like proposed legislation or can be proposed legislation as far as NRA supporting. And I think with this resurgence around Parkland, and like, you know, Not if, but when this happens again, it will only kind of be for the rhetoric and the fuel for
action. Well, didn't after Parkland, didn't like the Waffle Guy shooting? Like, didn't that happen like a couple weeks ago?
Yeah.
And like, he got off, like, I think he like made a bail.
I'm not surprised, but he was like a white dude, and then the black guy stopped, and like Trump tweeted at Kanye saying, like, thanks for wearing my hat, but nothing about the black dude who stopped the white supremacists. But that's,
yeah,
different podcast.
Oh,
anyway, but yeah, I think a lot of these things will happen. My thing is always that, even talking with like comrades and folks we work with on the daily, folks are like, yeah, like, this is good that like this legislation was going to pass, and it's like, this is cool,
but
this, it needs to be more holistic, because like the folks who are going to be marginalized from this are I won't say like the good guy with the gun, but just like poor folks and folks in black and brown communities who see this as a way that actually made me be protection. I feel like lots of times you hear from folks who hunt a lot, or folks who just want a gun because they want to protect their families, or a hobby. It's more kind of just to have. And again, hashtag #ShyDNA, go back to our drill and activism project. You talk to lots of these folks who are in this world in Chicago, especially who are in the gang and rap drill world and stuff, who talk about guns and their music a lot, but for like, you know, knowing, hanging out with some for a little bit now, it's like, no, they actually have it on, and that's the conflict of authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
Backing up from that, when you talk to a teenager, a young 20-year-old kid who carries a gun around pretty often because he has a price on his head, because if he does not have it, he could be shot at and not be able to retaliate, or he could die because he has nothing to to push them back away from literally killing him. Like, that's, you get to a different conversation. Yeah. And I think in even the city, people doing good work still, there's this rhetoric of put the guns down or like stop the killing, stop the shooting. It's like, well, if you killed my cousin 2 years ago and I've been raised in a way that doesn't, that doesn't show me these consequences, and I'm like, my life expectancy is really like 20s, 25s. And again, and you killed my cousin. I know who you are. I know where you hang out at. And I have free access to these, you know, weapons of destruction. Like, for people like us, or, you know, some people we know, it's like, that's crazy to think about. Wait, but if you break the world down like that, like, that's not a crazy thought, if I can retaliate that way. And we look at, again, the money and trauma and where money goes for services. If I have no way to, for that trauma to be treated by my cousin being killed, mm-hmm. if I have cops in my classroom and I want to talk to when I go to school, if I, you know, I'm struggling to eat every other day and I need something to hang on to, something to kind of cope with, right? Mm-hmm. And that retaliation is a thing I can, A, do, and B, I think will make me feel better, and hell, it might make me feel better, then that's going to be an attractive option. And it's, and like, you know, I'm not advocating violence in that way by any means, but like, I can understand why someone would want to do that. And then, and also compare that with, you know, they're a skilled lyricist and they listen to some music and they're talented and they want to put their music out in the world and they want to tell their experience and tell their truth through music, and that's their truth. And like, I'm going to talk about that. And so I think with the put the guns down and the stop the killing, mm-hmm. and the like, drill rap is bad, you know, looking at these things in a simplistic myelu, it's dangerous. And then when those people who say that support more cops in these communities or support, you know, military, you know, take away guns programs, it's like, that's a piece of the puzzle, and you have mm-hmm. to understand the whole thing. It's like, how about put the money towards trauma services for these youth, and not only alleviate the problems that make this a thing in the first place, but also have your way out of a healthy, equitable way to deal with the trauma in the first place. So, again, like, the Compton's gun reform, I'm for, but it has to be that, and this needs to be a holistic solution. It needs to happen, maybe not all at once, but it needs to be understood in the same strategic plan. Because if one thing happens, the other one doesn't, we're going to cause problems somewhere else. It's going to be unintended consequences, and we've seen that in other places as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I think what we can do right now is like go into a little more and like help folks who, you know, are learning just as we are of sort of what this really means and understanding, you know, this top down action. Like, okay, like, you're telling, you know, kids in certain communities to put their guns down, but you're increasing police presence, or you're increasing the budget for the military, or you're like, you know, Trump wants to have his dudes march down the middle of, I don't even know what,
military,
like,
parade.
Yeah, just like, yeah. And so it's like, if that's like, so let's break that down a little more. And I know, and I want you to do it because you know you've talked a little bit more on this subject right now. And it's like, so for this to be like a whole systemic problem, so like, do you believe then, or what do you believe is the best thing for us to do, hypothetically, like,
Colin, solve the gun problem right now, go
right now? No, not necessarily like that, but it's like, I'm maybe because like I've heard it, like that's probably like where it's coming from. But it's like, you know, so once we understand that this issue is a systemic problem, right? It's not just, you know, kids having nothing better to do but then kill each other, or like, cops, there being one bad apple and like, you know, sure, what have you, or there's a crazy person who goes into a school and shoots people. Outside of those, how is it then that we can start looking at this gun control problem, right? Yeah. And so like, if we start looking at it and understand from the get-go that it is a systemic problem, then we start looking at our system, right?
Yeah,
you look at the absolutely. Military, you look at how much money is being spent on the military on a yearly basis, right? And from there, we can go you know, stay domestic or go international, but for the sake of this conversation, we'll just stay domestic. And so then you start looking at manufacturing within, you know, if I was seeing, it's like on CNN for a minute, and I think gun homicides are 25 times more in the U.S. over all these other countries.
Yeah.
And the reason for it is because of the amount of guns that we have pumped into our system, right? And so, like, why are we still making guns if we have many fucking guns? I don't know. And so we're seeing it from that. I think that there's an issue with that particular point, and I just want to make it before we continue moving forward. But it's like, one of the things that I saw were like people, you know, like turning in their guns or something. They're like, you know, oh, I don't need this, you know, machine gun. AR-15. So I'm going to turn it into my police station. It's like, you're doing what? So like, and they're like, I encourage everyone else to do the same. You know, we want to make the world a safer place, so we should give the cops our guns. And I'm like, no, dude. I literally commented, like, I don't like comment on shit anymore because I like I get into fights with people. But like, I was like, no, like don't like this was a horrible idea. You're literally creating a bunker or like not a bunker. What's the name for it? Like where you have all your guns, you're stockpiling, and what is already a stockpiled place, right?
They get bread.
I mean, we've talked about that. Hashtag No Cop Academy, as hashtag always. But
I like that point though, because like I think that's an important part of it, and this is like kind of conservative talking point that I kind of like agree with as far as like, oh, like, you know, there's all these legal, you know, just public policy pushed forward to make it quote unquote harder to get guns, which normally is not that much harder, but it's just like, you know, for, you know, honest people who are going to follow the law to get guns, like that may be like, oh, but criminals are always going to be able to get guns, right?
Yeah,
I think that's an absolute, which isn't entirely true, but I think it's not totally a myth. I feel like, you know, obviously with the amount of guns just available, like it's like
in our fucking state,
right?
Yeah,
so I think, yeah, that's part of the whole solution as far as like literally don't make as many guns over time. That's we won't see the ramifications of that over like. It will be a while to be see that, of course, but I think that's part of it. You know, part of it's in the top down looking at the state, looking at the money that goes to military and cops. Part of it's legislation. Part of it's just on the consumerism and capitalism tip, and like not
because really we want
not
guns,
not creating.
Yeah,
the demand's there. Why is the demand there? Because I need to protect myself. Why? Because, you know, we get into gangs and how gangs were originated, and look at the systemic problems of anti-blackness and capitalism and poverty that kind of create gains in the first place. But I think that's a pivotal part that you mentioned, which I think is good.
Yeah, no, and I just found that the number that I was looking for. So it's like, according to CNN, probably be up, Americans own nearly half, which is 48% of the estimated 650 million civilian-owned guns worldwide.
That's so many guns.
It's like, why do we need so many fucking guns? I'm just kidding. Like, I don't know. It's beyond me. And like, you know, we're looking at least when we're talking about looking for solutions, right? So we understand that this is a systemic problem. We're understanding that it's like really where the money goes, but can we really just tell, you know, our system like, hey, you know what, like we're tired of like spending, you know, X amount of our budget on military when we already know we have like we have the biggest military.
We're
like
Gucci. We're Gucci.
Who the fuck is gonna, like, even if they do, like, like this is the thing, like if someone, I don't know, terrorism and like war, that's a whole fucking other topic. I mean, yes, I am, but like, but it's like I get it. Like, I understand the need in this day and age for this militarized sort of culture that we live in, right? And we were talking about it just in the car. We were talking about like, why you gotta kill that? You're like, man, we fucking kill this meeting, dude.
Well, it's like
what? Yeah. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I mean, no, you're right. It's like we're kind of getting into as far as like the, I think we talked a lot about the policy aspect and the systemic oppression aspect and all that, and gay race and white supremacy four times on the podcast. Yeah. But it's like this is a uniquely American problem. And I do wanna ask you about like other countries and what they do and how it's different here. But like just culturally and just the way we digest media, the way we digest music. I'm a big component of art reflecting culture and culture reflecting art. However, there's something about even the way we talk, which just promotes this idea of violence in such a subtle way, such a nuanced way, just a quote unquote apolitical way that just goes on the radar. Like I work in the fitness industry and it's like, oh, we killed that workout, or like, oh, you murdered that, or oh, it's always these really, and like, you know, bring up toxic masculinity. It's like, oh, we smack. No, it's always like violent terms for like,
you can say having sex
with women. You like slam, slash. Okay. Like all these terms. It's like, why?
That sounds horrible. Okay, you've heard that before?
I have not. That just came out in the mild. Point being,
we gotta start saying that. Yo,
no, we slash don't. That shit. That's
no, but I get exactly. My point what is, talking
everything
about.
We like, say is like, but it's like, yeah, it's like say we killed that meeting, right? It's like that's. Like violent, why do we have that in the meeting, like in a violent way that doesn't exist anymore? But it's like it's equated, it's parallel with a good thing, right? It's good to kill a workout.
Connotation.
It's good to kill a workout. It's good to like the murder on the basketball court. Because our
culture is like, you know, you strength is you know,
strength and power suppressed. And domination and obliterating your opponent.
Yep.
Is good.
Yeah.
Right. And we use that all the time. And I use the toxic masculinity example as like a harsh example, but we say it all the time in everything we talk about. So it's like, why is that always a good thing?
But it's interesting. It's like, so like, you know, a couple months back when we had that conversation of like, you know, toxic masculinity and being aware that we have to check our peers,
sure,
it kind of starts going on the same boat. And, but it also becomes, at least for me, I think it's become harder simply because of the culture that I'm processing on a daily basis. So we look at music, for example. The song that we just came into, This Is America, Donald Glover, he drops it, you know, May. I remember you like sent it to me, and I'm just amazed at this video. But however, if you like hear him through the song, he's using the same language that we're talking about that we're saying is problematic. Right. You know what I'm saying? But I'm fucking with this. I'm like jamming out to it. I'm like, yes. Yeah. I'm like, I understand that he knows that this is a problem, just like I know that it's a problem. But we're still being like, yo, I'm strapped, or like, whatever lingo language that we're using and feeding the culture.
So strapped, like, means you have a gun on you. For those who don't know,
if you really
uninitiated
by this time, if you don't know that, why are you still listening? No, I'm just kidding.
You have a tool or a hammer. That's also a lingo for gun. Just FYI.
that's gonna be a hip hop 2.0. We're gonna just break down.
We should just break down like all. We should have like a drill, linguistics. Like a drill thesaurus.
We should have like a little one? G or Tay here.
That'd be great.
That's not a bad time. Idea. But yeah, and so we're talking about it. We're seeing how this is a cultural problem. And then we look at other countries, right? I saw like a super like dope, like it was like an Independent Co, I think, 2 minute video on like Japan, and like it had zero deaths in 2010 related to guns. Like no one died according to their census 2010.
Wow.
And the reason for this is because it's hard as shit to get a gun. One, and two, because of their history with war. Right, you know, they got bombs dropped on them. No, we're gonna talk about bombs. They got bombs dropped.
By who? Who dropped those bombs?
Well, yeah, just like their culture in general. And so then, they add policy, and so they all realize that like we don't want guns, we don't need guns. And so then the police build different tactics. You know, they train particularly in the field of martial arts because they don't have, you know, firearms. So you have to learn to handle things differently. Which, guess what? Sure. You can. You know, our cops don't need to be walking around Wrigleyville with AR-15s or where the fuck they had.
Oh my god!
Right? Is that what you saw? I was like, what?
I filmed my Instagram story a couple times during Cubs games. They have M16s.
They got like fucking horses up the ass. It's like, bro, this is a Cubs game. Like, what are you worried? Do you think someone's gonna come in here and bomb this shit? Like, I don't know. That's,
if they do, how's your M16 gonna help the bomb? Anyway, but no, I mean, that's. I mean, getting back to our earlier point about, you know, funding and all that. It's like, why is M16s at baseball games? Like, it seems a little unnecessary. But it looks like our priorities as a city and as a state and as a nation. But with that, you told me about Japan. Yeah, and I was watching Fareed Zakaria. It was a while. It was after one of the mass shootings. And he's like, let's look at gun legislation in other countries, right?
Yeah.
And this kind of gets my point more so with the culture. It's like, I can't remember the exact countries. I apologize.
Okay.
But two different countries. I believe they're both in Europe. I'm not sure. But one had like very, very strict gun laws, similar to Japan. Maybe not that strict, but like, you know, guns weren't like a thing.
Yeah.
Very few, if any, gun deaths, gun problems with violence. Another country, very, very loose, very liberal gun laws. A lot of people had guns. It was a sporting thing. It was in with your family. Still, not a lot of gun laws, a lot of gun death. That's something I was mentioning when I have these conversations with folks. Who, you know, very much for straight gun control. I tell them, like, we should have, there is, I think, I do believe there is common sense gun legislation. However, it can't happen in a bubble. It can't happen in a vacuum because this is a cultural thing. And even if we have this legislation, which I think is necessary, and think good things can come from it, and that's been researched and shown, there's still a problem with the culture and the way we see violence, the way we see power, and the way we see masculinity.
Mm-hmm.
That's problematic and damaging and harmful in the most literal ways and in systemic ways as well. And so we have to have an honest conversation with ourselves about the impetus of our country and how it was founded on slavery and genocide, and how that hasn't really ended. I think you hear that a lot, especially in liberal, like leftist, liberal, whatever spaces. I don't like using that binary, but you know that's a language we have in our culture. You hear that a lot in those spaces, and there's talking points against that too. And it's like, oh, well, that was back then. We're here now, but it's a cultural thing. We don't have honest conversations about these things. You don't have honest conversations about the end of slavery, about Jim Crow, about the new Jim Crow, about like how all these, again, policies and narratives, especially that proliferate anti-blackness, capitalism, and mm-hmm. the expendable usage of marginalized people for the state and the elite's benefit. You don't have these conversations, and there needs to be an honest dialogue about that, and action that comes for it, mm-hmm. comes after it. When you look at like Germany, they obviously have a violent history, but they have reconciled with that history, and their stats with gun violence, with violence in general, are nowhere like ours. Mm-hmm. I think we haven't had that honest conversation and held people accountable and held systems accountable and institutions accountable for those problems, and that needs to happen as well. Mm-hmm. And it's about the narrative. Like, we're, you know, artists and liberal use of the word, we make movies mm-hmm. and visuals and make these podcasts and make art to kind of look at these things. That's how important art is as far as having these conversations and getting to the root cause of all these problems. Mm-hmm. We need to change the narrative. I feel like you hear that a lot now too, but it's like, it's very real. If the masses don't believe it, then it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. That's part of, we talk about, you know, the new Jim Crow and 13th and the war on drugs and all that. People are awake to it now, which again, I always say is awesome. but we look at the PSAs, the shittily produced PSAs from the 80s under Reagan with PB Herman, all these other things about drugs are bad. This is your brain on drugs, all this bullshit. But it worked. People believed it. And poor white folks believed that. And they associated drugs and violence or criminality and crack cocaine with black people. And they got separated by elites and by the state. And that made it easy to control. Mm-hmm. And as we see a resurgence of that kind of rhetoric now with Trump, and it's like, this shit isn't new. And we're seeing this again over and over again. I think now we have a more cross-stream activist resurgence against that, and we have people who have privilege, white folks with money, who are kind of more so on our side now, which is cool. It's like, you understand, we've been doing this for decades, for centuries, mm-hmm. and we can't have these piecemeal neoliberal bullshit approaches to changing these systems. We need to understand these in a radical approach, understand shit's not going to happen overnight. Mm-hmm. It needs to be holistic. It needs to understand all these different spheres, mm-hmm. manufacturing, policy, culture, whatever. And it's not going to, it's going to take a long time, and shit's going to get bad.
Before it gets better.
Shit's going to get real bad.
Yeah.
Like, oh, if there's like, I don't know, shit's going to get bad before it gets better. And it just is. That's like, yeah. I think that's, with any radical approach, any revolution, it's never happened just overnight. It's been peaceful and great. So it's going to take a long time, but we have to understand it's a holistic approach, or else something's going to get done.
Yeah, and so
I'm like super depressed
now. No, but I mean, it's about holding people accountable, right? We're so quick to blame mental Trump. Health, right? We're quick to like blame people, yes. or we're quick to like, and it's. I think it's also like it's case by case. You know, we have how many shootings of people, like unlawful shootings by either a person in a uniform and or just another civilian, like
right.
Why? Like it's interesting because like we're looking at cops, you know, when they're cruising, like serve and protect, they got stamped on the side. It's like who do they serve and protect,
right?
Right, and so it's like I'm scared that these fucks have guns, so I want guns. Like and like, you know, right. I know we talked a lot about like drill and like these artists and like, you know, looking at these spaces that we oftentimes see as vilified, whether through their music video or just their content in general.
Sure.
But then we take it a little bit more to a more like, you know, normal man's approach of like why you would want a gun or why, you know, why you really hate guns. Like that conversation is great, but it's like the goal is to get to an understanding that once you understand the systemic, once you understand that then that there are actual solutions. Australia, like, bought its guns from its people. They're like, yeah, if you guys got Gats, we'll pay you for them. And they're like, yeah, sure, here's, you know, I have 7 guns, but you know, they just told me I can get $5,000 if I sold all these guns right now. Bet. You don't tell me, like, and like, that's just one way in which to actually, like, start making that change. Then you stop closing down schools, right? Put these shorties into after school programs, increase employment, all things that Good Kid, Mad City, you know, has listed on their mission, right? And like them, there are plenty of other organizations that are calling for the same thing. But once again, these aren't the conversations that are being heard by everyone. The conversations that are being heard is very particular instances that somebody somewhere is profiting off of. And that's why that's in the mainstream. And the goal is like we continue, and that's once again we go back to the girl with the tweets. Like I love this. Like, hopefully we take this momentum, we go back and we go yes. with our organizers yes, and then the, from so their much. Collective. Because, like, they were in Washington when that happened. I remember when yeah. me and you were at in Washington for the Women's March, you know, and that energy that we felt when we, like, were on our way back. And sure, we drove for, like, 9 hours. But I remember coming into the city and I'm like, I'm fucking hyped. Like, we just did some cool projects. We just interacted with some amazing people. There's so many other people who feel like me. Like, let's do this. And we've been on a run since.
Hashtag Soapbox and Trump Land. Go watch it.
But I think it's important. And I think that the fact that we have these moments, whether it is in our art, like with Gambino's music video, or whether it's with our organizers and our activists on the floor, like Tiffany, you know, or people like us who are also, you know, everyone's trying to make a change and you find the outlet to do so. Yeah, it's a systemic problem. Yeah, sure, it's going to be a bitch. You know, like, there's so many sides to it. You know, you personally, you know... actually, I don't know what you personally believe in. We can get into that a little more, but like,
you know?
on my side, no, I do. On my side is always like, I'm okay with people having a firearm. I think that it's, if like we understood that everyone has a gun kind of mentality, but like, I get it.
You don't
it
have gets a little dangerous. It's a myth.
I get it's a myth, but like, let me also tell you something. It's like, to me, and this is like, we're getting a little bit like, you know, not meta, but going that route. It's like, if no one in my community has a firearm, but there's patrol cars all around, for anything to happen, you know, if the cop one day knows that no one in this community has any way to defend themselves, they can do whatever the fuck they want, right? In that headspace, if it were to come that, if like they were able to go into community and strip all their guns, do you personally think that we're gonna have less police officers in the city?
Under the pretense that
there are no guns, like that we all sold our guns, the city of Chicago, no one has guns. Or like if you have gun, like
would the police officers also be like demilitarized? Is that what you're saying?
Well, no. Do you think that's things like I think all of the legislation or all of the conversation is always like on the civilians.
And oh no, it is. You're right. Yeah. And I don't think that would happen. Nor do I think that's like the solution either. All I was saying earlier was that everyone gun would solve the gun problem is a lie and a myth.
And I think it's the same thing as like if you take away everyone's gun, it's the same thing. I mean, if you take everyone's by everyone, we mean the system in itself also has to.
But
agree
it's like
with
that's
this, right?
that's a hypothetical that can't be.
No, it's not possible.
Tried to carry it out. I think it should be stricter, like gun laws, sure. Yeah. But I think that should also go with the civilians as well as the police and the military.
Yeah.
And the money should be. I said this earlier. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I do agree with you in that sense. Yeah. But kind of piggybacking on that a little bit with like folks, you know, needing guns to defend themselves and police in particular. Look at California in the 60s and 70s. Like they turned to have the strictest gun laws under the Mulford Act, and that was because Reagan and white folks were scared of the Black Panthers or like having guns
because they were just posted.
Because it was open carry state back then, so Black Panthers would, you know, follow police around, make sure they didn't kill or harm Black and brown folks. They would take with them rifles and
but that's
ARs.
What, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, I am all for that. It's a checks and balance, my dude. Like,
sure.
This is an argument my brother made super quickly. It's like. Any human being holding a firearm, not just like males, like let's talk about like, you know, you have a small, you know, human versus somebody else. You give them both a gun, it puts it into a different plateau of like, you're just equal. You both have the same ability to do the same amount of damage.
I understand that, but on the flip side, how about let's slowly take it away from both people.
Fair, but still, one person's still going to be bigger than the other. That's what I'm trying to get. What I'm trying to get is like, if it gets to a point where like you have a certain individual who without this firearm cannot actually protect themselves, right? We're not talking about a drill rapper. It's just some lady walking down the street, some motherfucker tries to rob her bag or some dumb shit.
Yeah.
She pulls out a gun, she automatically has either equal level or beyond, right? Do you agree or disagree?
Sure.
And so what I'm getting at is like the gun, there is a use for the gun, and I personally don't think that every American in the world needs to give up their guns. I don't. I think that some people have way too many guns, personally.
Sure.
Like, and I think the biggest problem is you start seeing changes in our military, which then trickle down, right?
And when I say holistic, I don't mean wholesale. As far as everyone needs to go, no guns ever anywhere. Blah. Like, because that's just not practical. So it's like, why even entertain that?
Okay.
But let's look at a whole list.
But I mean, there are people who think like that, right?
And that's fine. I'm not having that conversation because it's kind of pointless because it's not going to happen. So I'm looking at a holistic versus wholesale method as far as looking at all these different avenues. And it's just that point about the Panthers and the California in the 60s is important because like I said, there is a real fear, especially in like marginalized people's community, to like defend themselves against the state. I think more so than the conservative talking points you normally hear. However, in the 90s, you saw a lot of that. Saw a lot of like Nazi sympathizers and like kind of cultish white folks defending themselves against the state. And some of that shit was kind of nuanced as far as like, you know, what happened to Waco in 92 and 93. I'm not sure what year, but like what that looked like as far as the state coming on people's lands and doing bad stuff. So I think that is more a nuanced conversation to have, again, with all kinds of people in this country. And so, but the Black Panthers thing is very particular because it's like, I saw a tweet acting at the Parkland, some black dude was on Twitter. He's like, you want to like have strict gun laws? Give every black man in the country a gun. You'll get strict gun laws by Monday. It was like Saturday. So it's like, that's what happened in California. Like, they saw these black folks who were, you know, following around police, make sure they didn't harm their communities, with very salient 12-gauge shotguns, M6, like large guns, not just like large guns. And they developed this law and passed it so that black folks wouldn't have guns to defend their communities. And not back then, as it's not now, but like it was really a necessity to do that and follow police around and find what they're doing. Again, now that's not a need to do now.
That's all I wanted to hear personally think it's like.
Again, my thing is like, yeah, it's like, yeah, we can defend ourselves against this and the other, but it's like, let's make it so we don't have so many ops in the first place. You know, defend ourselves against anybody, right? But it's like, and look at how those ops form, whether they're in our communities, there's folks like us, or if they're the state, and bring it down to a level that's equitable and healthy and promotes peace and love and prosperity. But again, it's not going to happen overnight. So it's going to take a long, long way to get there.
Yeah. And like so taking it a little bit to the conversation of like what we see with our art, you know, like, yeah, we understand that guns are a problem in America. Like, we all get it. Some of us feed to it. Some of us are trying to fight against it, right? But regardless of it, like, it's still a thing. And so, you know, you add gang culture, especially the gang culture you have here today. You know, we're constantly talking about Chi DNA, but you know, in Chicago. But we have to understand that the problem isn't necessarily that. The problem is, you know, a result of their ecosystem. You know, you look at the levels of poverty. You look at what surrounds them in terms of like policy and just, you know, narratives that are anti-black. You know, we talked about it, the Reagan ads or the PSA ads or whatever, like that was able to persuade people, and that is what they grew up with. And that, like, maybe they kind of at some moment in time hopefully realized like, yo, like maybe this shit wasn't completely accurate. And like, that's what we hope. You can't expect that was the case. But we see this in so many other places, right? And interestingly enough, you know, we're talking about drill music, so you got like UK drill, right?
Oh, I spent like half an hour on YouTube looking at like UK drill. So just let me explain it. We always do. Just drill rap is, you know, a Chicago version of gangster rap, very tied to hyper local geography of gangs in Chicago, has, you know, very specific sound to it and everything like that. So then we take huge drilling in Chicago, like gangster rap, so to speak. But yeah, like
UK drill. What the fuck?
So yeah, in UK, over in London particularly, they have their own kind of like brand of drill, so to speak. A lot of it's influenced by, and they obviously have their own lingo. They have their own kind of references and stuff to like London specific, UK specific things. But it sounds a lot like the drill rap in Chicago.
Thought I'll ride like autumn towers. Do roll the snap by 500 miles in 48 hours. I've seen man said they run and drop, get stabbed like cowards. Dice them packs into parcels, going through work on a day.
Hey, free head, I'm on Operation Goon shit. I'm someone you should get in tune with.
This is it?
The first one was UK. This is Kim Louie.
Open hands in the magazine. Turn a party to a murder scene. If I send them, then they murder ring. Silent shots, they ain't heard a thing. MOB won't give a bird a wing. Straight drop.
So first of all, they both bang, right?
They both are wonderful.
But they sound like so similar, right? And it's like there's a line, and obviously there's no guns in the UK, right? But you look at the UK and violence between, you know, their poor, their low income, black and brown, especially males, it's a knife problem, right? It's all about stabbing and machetes and, oh, blade, and folks will carry like huge machetes and blades on them.
Yeah. I would carry
katana. Like in kind of in lieu of guns, right? Because they're, you know, they might have stricter gun laws or the gun isn't as much of a problem as there as is over here. But they have the same problems with knives and stabbings. And so in the first artist, SJ from 63, he talks about like stabbing someone or someone getting stabbed. And then King Louis has a very elaborate way of talking about on guns or shooting somebody, right? And so it's like the same kind of metaphor or wordplay in this art form, this music. He's talking about like the very much like the environment that he's coming from. We're talking about guns, talking about knives. Coincidentally enough, several months ago, I had the pleasure of meeting Timmy Wale. I'm not sure if I say her name right.
Wale.
She does some awesome work with Forefront Project in the UK, working with black and brown youth, working with folks who are going through trauma of friends or loved ones getting stabbed or going through some kind of violent incident, and kind of not only on working with them one-on-one or kind of in some counseling way of trying to dealing with that trauma, like I mentioned earlier, but also working with groups as far as reallocating funding and resources to grassroots groups doing this work and kind of reallocating the money and resources to this, again, the systemic problems that we get gangs and we get, you know, folks needing to protect themselves and carry huge machetes on them in the UK in very real ways.
How do you hide that? Right? I mean, I can see how you hide it, but it's like...
it's crazy. But like, she summed it up very well. I won't take her words from her, but she was on a show not too long ago, and she said this.
I would like to see urgent support for all the young people that have been victims of serious violence, including stabbings, over the last 12 months. They urgently require trauma interventions, support, counselling, therapy to come to terms with the violence that they've suffered. As communities, we need to be trained, grassroots organisations, community-based groups. We need urgent training in how to assist young people developing coping skills and mechanisms when they're going through this trauma. We're working with young people that are anxious, they're going through paranoia, they're fearful, they have anxiety, and they're depressed a lot of the time. They're traumatised. Not all of these organisations have the skills to work with those young people. We have the relationships, but we need more skills so that we can deal with that reality. And the reality is, if the Mayor's Office can find money for the campaigns, if the Home Office can find money for the campaigns, we're talking 32 million for the Knife Free campaign, there's money that we can invest into these types of trauma interventions in the short term.
It's just not going to the right places at the moment.
Oh, baby girl. Yes!
I want to say, oh, she kills it. And it's like, that's probably a problem. No, but like, I mean, okay, what's your reaction? It's the first time seeing it, right?
Yeah, that's the first time seeing it. And like, I understood, and like, we had kind of talked about, like, you know, like, violence, there will always be violence, right? Regardless of what it is that we're talking about. And so like, but like really, really paying more attention to like this like knife situation that this country is dealing with. And really the gravity in which it is the problem. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like we're literally talking about like, oh, how many shootings have there been in Chicago this year? You know, like that's the type of conversation we're having because that's what's going on. But you go into somewhere else and they're like, oh, how many people have been stabbed this year? You're just like, well, like, motherfucker just going around stabbing people. And so once I kind of saw that, like, how big of a problem it actually was, and like really seeing the similarities between the music, like when you were just playing right now, it's like, when we started it and then when it switched, I didn't really know like which one started first. And it was, this is so similar.
UK versus Chicago.
Yeah, UK versus Chicago. Yeah. It's like, and it's the similarities are there and that's and so great. But in listening to her, it's exactly what we all need. Like, and I actually might say that I feel that there are actually organizations in Chicago though who are already trained in dealing with these traumas.
Well, I think she was saying that like, we need to allocate money towards these people because she's doing that work too.
Okay.
And one of the things she mentioned, I met her at a panel, Chicago Urban League, on like intercommunal violence. What should we do about it? She had a lot of activists, a lot of cool, awesome folks, public health folks too, on that panel. And her and Charles Price were talking about like the money. Yeah. And like, there's an old head there who, you know, well respected and stuff. He was talking to them and saying, hey, like, you don't need money to do this work. And like, you know, it's passion, woo woo. Which there's some truth to that, right? Like, we're doing this, we're not getting paid. No, but like, there, you can do so much without money. You can do a lot without money, which is impressive. But it's like, one thing she mentioned on that panel was like, hey, if I had like X amount, it was a couple of thousand dollars, she's like, I could have housed these couple shorties for like this long, and they wouldn't have been on the streets because they feared for their life because this happened previously and they were associated with this person, which wasn't their fault. But like, she named someone, he's like, he was killed because he didn't have a place to go, woo woo. Basically saying that, like, if she had money, she could have housed the person for this long and got them, yeah, you know, got them somewhere else. So like, yeah, like money does matter, as much as we don't like it. Like, yeah, especially in like, not just nonprofit, but like grassroots, doing like radical work and having this analysis on poverty, anti-blackness, capitalism, consumerism, especially. It's like, no, money matters in us doing this work. This isn't free work. And some reason it's always seen that way, which is just a slap in the face. And so I think one thing she was, I love that she was saying there was like, you know, this knife free campaign. And you hear things about like, take the guns away and the gun, you know, all these things campaign, like that cost $32 million there. And she also mentioned there in the panel that I saw, as well as another interview, that they have these things like, oh, look, us confiscate all these knives from this neighborhood. And they'll like showcase this on the news, all these knives of like a big, you know, law and order achievement win. It's always seen these wins and losses thing, which is another problematic binary. But it's like, we won, like we put all these guns away. Shorties from, you know, the ops neighborhood will see that and they'll know that they can't defend themselves in neighborhood X, and they'll come, you know. So it's like, yeah, you're just broadcasting this shit, not understanding the intercommunal, the personal ramifications this has on people.
Yeah.
And not only just like the practical ramifications, but like the people, folks' psyche and how to defend themselves, how to deal with this trauma, and in the way just corporate and mainstream media, as well as public policy that is neoliberal in its approach, and then by that I mean like a very punitive, very looking at private interests, all that isn't helpful. Doesn't have the interests of real public health and real marginalized folks having equitable opportunity to resources and like seeing their communities to the full potential that it can be, because they've been divested for so long.
Yeah,
and then they get reinvested in, it's a form of gentrification. It pushes them out even further. So this is it's all related. It's all cyclical. Therefore, there needs to be a related, cyclical, holistic approach to attacking these things. Yeah. My big thing with bringing up UK drill, with Chicago drill, as well as just like knives versus guns, all that, is that, yes, again, there should be the common sense gun regulation, but like these problems are bigger than that. These problems have to do with how the narratives operate around money, how the narratives operate around Black and brown folks as criminals, and around divestment and poverty, and how it's been very intentional in these communities.
So tell me, Colin, does crime pay?
Crime does pay. Crime pays heavily.
Oh, but baby, who's it pay?
It pays judges. Hey. It pays lawyers. It pays coroners. It pays the ambulances. It pays a lot of people who aren't marginalized or low income Black and brown folks, or marginalized white folks too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Anyone who's
not a white elite. He asked the bourgeois. Because it has to do with everything where the bourgeoisie who want to get real marks with it. But they opposed that because I'm also wearing a shirt that says Crime Pays on it from Trap House Chicago. David, please tell me a little bit about Trap House Chicago. I'll pitch to you this time.
Trap House is a wonderful organization that's been doing their shit on the South Side, 79th and Ashland, and they got a little spot set up where you can go in and buy streetwear. So it's just shirts, long sleeves, etc. And their whole motto is this restorative justice, right? And so it's like using their brand in order to put out a message, right? And so like there's shirts that, you know, says, you know, crime pays, and on the back gives you a list of who it really pays, right? It does not pay the community. And so it's like, it's taking a very simple thing, to me personally, it's a simple thing, sure, and putting it in such a it's like a really dope ass thing. You know, like, you're rocking this sweater, like, you know what you're rocking, and everyone's fucking looking at you because, you know, we are a brand, you know, you're walking with it. And so it's like, sometimes, you know, I know you also got that white supremacy shirt, and I'm sure motherfuckers look at this black dude, it's like, what the fuck is what? And then you read the back and you're like, wait, I'm so confused. And if they want to talk to you, they'll talk to you. But like, you know, right, that at least anything, they'll go home and they'll be like, the fuck, you know, if anything. But yeah, shout out to Trap House, doing amazing work. You know, and allowing, because what they also do with their second spaces, I know that they have open mics, you know, every third Friday.
Healing spaces as well. Have folks come and talk about their trauma and kind of talk through it, because the state doesn't offer that service. So like, we're stepping in. They are stepping in.
Someone else has to. You know why? Because like, we all eat. You know, shout out Trap House. But you know, we're having this conversation of like guns and like gun control and like why this is such a bigger problem, and like taking it in a little bit larger scope and then bringing it back home, because that's all you'll ever know, you know. And whether you're listening to, you know, in Chicago with us, or you're somewhere else, like, you're looking at your community, you're looking at what's around you, and you're seeing like how these issues like develop within your community. You have communities like Charleston, you know, in South Carolina, you know, that I don't know of another incident where someone came in and literally shot up a fucking church, you know. And so, and sometimes it takes that, you know, the Parkland kids, you know, all these lists of spaces that we can talk about that have been, you know, affected by it. I think Chicago and other large, you know, metropolitan cities deal with it in a much different way. You know, we're too much. Sure. It's like, sadly, you know, we kind of become numb to like, hey, oh yeah, they just like, you know, these two kids got shot up like just the other day down here on, you know, 63rd and whatever. You're just like, damn, because that's the norm. You know, we were hanging out with Tay the other day.
Yeah.
Shout out to Tay Savage. But we were like literally hanging out, and he was just telling us a story about, you know, his boys across the street. He's like, yeah, he was just literally just chilling. You know, he got shot up. Cops came through. They just kind of just put a thing over him because, you know, they didn't want to deal with it. But we also have to understand that in that, we got the other side. So we got these orgs. We got people putting in work, like, you know, our friends at March for Our Lives, you know, in the UK doing her thing. Do you know when she'll be back? Like, where's she at right now?
I'm assuming. I have no idea.
All right. We're shouting you out wherever you out. But, yeah, it's you know, sadly, it's in our culture, you know, that the best thing we can do is work to defund and demilitarize the policies that we have right now, right? And so the example that we're given is No Cop Academy. Rob's trying to build his $95 million cop academy in the west side of Garfield Park. Why? I don't fucking know. Do we got the money? We shouldn't. You've been closing down schools and trauma centers and hospitals and, like, defunding programs that people on the other side of the world are trying to fund to help motherfuckers deal with trauma and yada, yada, yada. And so you have people, you know, putting in work, and it's always about connecting yourself. Sometimes we feel like, well, what can I do? I'm like, I'm a buttfuck nowhere. I want to make an impact. And you can make an impact. It's like every single person here has the ability to have the internet. And with the internet, you got social media. You can connect with groups from all over the world. And that's I think, one of the most beautiful things. And with that, it's like, we were talking about, like, oh yeah, mass shootings, yada, yada, yada. I really feel that we are more exposed to it simply because anyone can record a shooting now. It's like back in the day, like, oh, did you hear about blah, blah, blah? Oh, they got shot up? Like, what, blah? Back now, you can literally be like, oh, look at this fucking video. I'm putting it on Facebook. Someone else sees that shit. Everyone sees it. Everyone sees it. And I think, you know, we have to constantly make sure that we're using technology to our advantage, right? Especially in this day and age. Like, yeah, it's going to get bad before it gets better. But the goal is that we got each other, right? And we all eat, right?
Of recording shootings, like, themselves?
No, not necessarily recording shootings. I think that we've been exposed to more of that type, yeah, of shit.
Okay, of social media. I think of, like, okay, sure. Like,
yeah, the visual. No, I'm not saying you record shootings. Yeah. I mean, if there's a shooting happening, like,
police and stuff, it's like, you, yeah, cop watch, and then you, yeah, might get, yeah, something, yeah, which has happened several times, unfortunately. Yeah, I think you're right. I think the connection we can have through social media, through just very just hardcore activism, as well as using the tools of our day to connect with folks, using art to connect with folks, whether it be, you know, here and me listening to some drill rap and then listening to some UK drill and understanding their problems kind of through that, Milo, and then knowing Timmy and the kind of learning about how she's doing that work, kind of, mm-hmm, trying to alleviate that pain, but her understanding where these UK drill rappers are coming from, just like lots of activists in Chicago understand where, you know, Tay and some of the other folks are coming from. I was trying to alleviate that trauma from happening in the first place. And it's messy and it's nuanced, but there's a way to do it. And again, that's a holistic approach. The approach to violence and gun violence, particularly in America, is a holistic approach. And I think it starts with the narrative. You know, like you said, it starts with the narrative. I think it starts with whatever you have at your disposal, whether that be informing yourself or using your skills somehow to get that narrative out there, and then looking at the actionable steps you can take to start that process. And it will not happen in our generation. It will not happen quickly.
I mean, well, you don't know that.
I mean, as far as, like, the end goal. I mean, but I think we can make great strides in our administration, in our generation. I think we're looking to that now. But it's not gonna come easy. It's not, yeah, gonna come easy. There's forces against us that have power and money and resources, but we can collaborate in order to that people power.
Yeah, and that's really, and it starts with establishing dialogue. You know, we said it's just gonna get bad, but, you know, having spaces in which for us to communicate. And I think you have a very valid point when you said that. I think we as an American society have not had a real discussion yet about like what the fuck it means that our Second Amendment, like the second thing on our whatever that runs our country, is literally the right to bear arms. And that I don't want to say we've manipulated it, but I think we've allowed it to. Because I think like it's like I think it was it, when they wrote it, it was valid. Like, yeah, we all want to be strapped. Like that's fine. But I think no one understood where guns were gonna go.
I can see that. And then it was like it took how long to reload a gun to shoot, where now it's like you can kill.
It was more like a statement to me. Like if you're shooting, it was like
we came from, you know, our nation was founded. On like essentially terrorists because we proceeded from the you know
they went around
which is what it is. But it's like they knew there needed to be a space to especially then since like states' rights were such a big thing. I'm talking about pre-Civil War when the states had so much power. It's like, you know, we didn't have a you know, well-oiled militia to be ready in case we needed to fight against the state if it gets corrupt, which it is, or other things.
What doing?
And then that's very much kind of the Panthers' mentality as far as the state is corrupt. The states hate black people. We have all these examples of how, and so we're going to use the state's policies not against them, but to watch them, keep them in check.
Yeah.
So I think their way of bearing arms is a lot different than a lot of folks today. But that's all to say that, like, that's, you know, second Amendment, that's how it started. But now it's co-opted as far as, like, oh, I should be able to have a gun because the Constitution, Bill of Rights says I can't have a gun. When it's like, but do you understand the impetus and, like, really, the origins of it? And so it's like, again, it's part of understanding our history. I talked earlier about having these conversations about, like, you know, the Civil War and about slavery and genocide against the native peoples and all that, and that's all true. But it's like also, let's look at the Second Amendment, like why we had that, and like actually read the Second Amendment and read the words about militia and like what the militia means and why it is necessary. But there's a deeper conversation that needs to happen there as well. But it's like we need to have a conversation about our history and where these things come from and understand how we've changed and how like all that stuff is not necessarily invalid, but needs to have a revamp, a 21st century revamped. Revamp now.
Wait, but can countries do that, Colin? Can you just like, you know, go in and change your constitution?
Countries do it. Turkey did it. And dudes fucking. China did it. Dude, dudes. Bro, I mean,
I'm just asking.
Yes, they. I mean, they can. They have. And not that I'm saying there's not cons to rewriting the constitution because who gets to do that? What are their interests? All that. However, 2018 is much different from 1776, right? And so
the fact that you got that year, I'm impressed.
I know my shit, son.
Oh boy.
So we have conversations about these things, valid, comprehensive conversations, honest conversations, conversations that have everyone at the table. I think that's a part I really meant to mention earlier about these put down the guns and these, you know, all this kind of bullshit rhetoric around like gun problems. Is like talk to the shooters. Like we, like the community knows who's doing these things most of the time. So it's like, but they didn't want to get got. So it's like having this conversation with folks who are actually on the ground experiencing or contributing some of the violence, like those who need to be, that's who needs to be at these discussions. And for the folks who actually can have money influence to understand where they're coming from and actually look at the, again, systemic problems that interpersonal violence and intercommunal violence kind of comes from.
Yeah.
Again, needs to be holistic. I'm going to say that a million times.
It's okay. But wherever you're at, you know, And that's how you start. You know, you start building these dialogues with people, right? And then you look for organizations, you look for other people, you use the internet and social media and put yourself to a large organization. Because that's what it is. Is you find something you're really about, and there's gonna be someone else who thinks like you, right? And at this point in time, we're all pushing or hoping to push for some sort of change, for progress, because at the end of the day, we also are tired of having bodies die for literally what I liked. It just dumb shit. Just dumb shit. And a lot of it can be averted. A lot of it is unnecessary. But we need to have tools at our disposal in order for us to make it till tomorrow. So, absolutely. This is dope. As always, from Bourbon and Brown Town, stay black, stay brown, stay queer.
Stay tuned, stay turnt.
We out. See you next time.
He said he with T.Y. on the highway and some niggas just tried to kill him. Emptied the clip on the car, but somehow they didn't hit him. Sometimes I fucking hate Chicago because I hate this feeling.
For more information on episode guests, related media, and topics, check out the episode notes. Follow us on social media at SoapboxPO and or visit SoapboxPO.com/podcast.